This is Helen Cannon with Petals and Prose. More than 20 years ago, I wrote a piece on Byron Chadwick, who at that time owned and had envisioned the whole of Willard Bay Gardens, except at that time it was called Chadwick's Gardens. And I call this a perennial gentleman because his gardens emphasized perennial plants. I start with the epigraph from Gertrude Jekyll. Good gardening means patience and dogged determination. It is not easy at all. Melvin Dumar, on the strength of a supposed encounter on the Nevada desert, laid claim to 1/6 of Howard Hughes's fortune. Dumar thereby achieved national notoriety, unlikely for a service station manager from a small town of Willard, Utah. Melvin Dumar has long since left that little service station, but his neighbor, Byron Chadwick, has operated the plant nursery next door for nearly 40 years. Station and nursery stand there, strange bedfellows, nestled together at the base of Willard Peak. Chadwick's plants consists of an unprepossessing little house, painted symbolically green for as long as I've known it, a roadside stand, a shed, and a few modest greenhouses. It has been for many a spring my happy destination. Being as I am, a lover of perennial plants, an eschewer of instant annual gardening, Chadwick's nursery is one of the finds of my lifetime. In fact, when I think of all the trips I've made along this Utah fruit strip, passing Chadwick's by, I feel a keen sense of loss. For more years than I care to mention, I have stopped along this pleasant portion of Highway 89 for cherries or peaches, apricots, grapes, or at Jesse's Fine Pies, the trucker's haunt, now closed, alas, where one could actually get a piece of fine pie. Have stopped, come to think of it, for gas at Dumar Station, and yet have not stopped at the plant lover's Mecca, tucked unobtrusively against the mountain. But now I pass all the other places by, the fruit stands, the formerly appealing antique shops. I blithely whiz by the Heritage Theater, converted from a lovely old Latter-day Saint meeting house, and scarcely pause to look at the roadside homes with their adjacent rose gardens. Nowadays, I head single-mindedly to Chadwick's nursery, and will continue to be the object of my spring pilgrimage for as long as its proprietor, Mr. Byron Chadwick, is there. For the nursery and Mr. Chadwick are, in my mind, inseparable. His is the vision and the know-how. His are the hands. In his 86th year, he has been the one to order seed stock, over 300 varieties this year, mix the soil, plant and care for thousands of seedlings, transplant specimen plants to his model gardens, then label the plants, weed, and nurture them. He has been the one to collect, stone by stone, the uniformly chosen round white rocks for the terraced mountainside gardens. It is he who has trained the 6 women who now work for him part-time, one of whom confesses that before his tutelage, she wasn't sure what a petunia likes, and I'll bet that she learned a stilby before petunia in the process. In the age of hard sell, plastic packaging, single-minded profit motive, in an age that could spawn a Howard Hughes, the ironic juxtaposition of Chadwick's Haven next to Dumar's station is an unspoken commentary in 2 ways. And now that the fast lane no longer passes through Willard, the freeway having bypassed this route, I have the audacity to hope that Mr. Chadwick's will for a while remain sanctuary for those who pause and for those who want more than a splash of disposable color for summer gardens. In my observations, Mr. Chadwick's plants and gardens, and in my conversation with him in the last several years, something of his life has begun to emerge, like the revelation in the magical opening of a flower. This year, as I walked with him through his terraced gardens, I felt a certain urgency to record outcroppings of his remarkable life. Though I know only the sketchiest outline of his story through his gardens and his plants, through, indeed, his gardener's hands and his suntanned face, I can deduce something of the man. In the first place, without actually knowing this gentleman, I can safely assert that he's patient. Gardening on the level he does it requires that trait. I've done enough with plants to know that, and I marvel over the results of his patient labor. I know what it means to start even a few plants from seed, to tend them once they sprout, providing the seeds have a proven viability, to watch them grow, sometimes to watch them wilt if they miss a single watering, or curl up and die an early death if overwatered. I know what it is to discover that I've planted them too soon, finding the survivors grown leggy or pot-bound before they could be moved to roomier conditions that their young limbs require. I know it's a balancing act to weigh this possibility against the very real probability that young seedlings set out too soon will be zapped by northern Utah frosts known to occur well into June. I know what it is to further miscalculate planting a seedling that seems so permanently small, too close to its fellows, or putting it in the wrong light or soil drainage conditions. I know what it is to see a bed of seedlings thriving one evening and then to discover them devoured by slugs the next morning. Multiply these problems by the number of plants Mr. Chadwick handles, and you can be sure he is a patient man. Patience underlies his well-behaved rock garden plantings as well. Plants, not generally tractable creatures, but like growing children, have minds of their own and wills to go their own ways. In my own garden, the lamb's ear has grown too large, sprawling over the silver mound artemisia, importing a sickly jaundiced look instead of its characteristic silver luster. My bee balm has crowded out the pearly everlasting, and the black-eyed Susans are simply threatening to take over the whole place. The seedlings cropping up everywhere, and the profligate parents towering over the and shading the less aggressive and certainly less promiscuous neighbors. In Mr. Chadwick's display gardens, though, hundreds of varieties of plants grow obediently behind their labels, courteous and well-mannered, amenable as a group of schoolchildren who love and respect and wish to please their teacher. The fact is that these plants show the results of pruning and thinning, of planned arrangement by a master gardener who knows not only their names, but their habits and their occasional unruliness. As I write, I try to recall just what Mr. Chadwick looks like. I remember him to be spry and slim, fine-featured and suntanned. Mostly I remember him to be smiling, his eyes bright and almost mischievous beneath the brim of the old felt hat he wears to shade them. It seems to me that he wears bib overalls, but that could be imagination's pleasure, not the truth. None of this, in fact, is very clear or specific. Perhaps that's because my visual attention has always focused on his hands. I remember watching them, slim and tanned and adroit. A still life of his hands wouldn't do. It is their motion that tells the tale. I can see his narrow fingers as they sift a handful of soil, checking it for moistness and composition. I can see them snap off flower heads past their prime. To leave them would be to sap the plant's energy, so the decapitations are merciful. I see the same gnawing fingers as they tunnel beneath the soil's surface to disengage with surgical skill the roots of a weedy plant. These hands, weeding, my memory can bring that into the sharpest focus, while the more common points of descriptive attention are blurred. I am told that those hands have been as graceful at the piano as they are at the garden, but my experience has been only to see how carefully his fingers distinguish the various needs among the plants. His extraction of a violet gone weedy, for instance, bears no similarity to his technique for pulling out salsify, cousin to the dandelion. His fingers work to loosen the soil around the spreading roots and runners of the violet, easing out the whole plant, subterranean seeds and all, rather than popping off the above-ground portions as inexperienced hands might do. The salsify receives specialized treatment as well, a vertical pull of some force to which it yields with surprise, complete with taproot. Oxalis, with its tangle of roots, clings stubbornly but succumbs at last completely to jiggling, unhurried tugging. I'll read the rest of this essay in the next Petals and Prose. Thank you for listening. This is Helen Cannon.